We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is August 1st, which all of you know is the internationally recognized Happy Pumpkin Spice Latte Day. This is officially, in at least my world, the first official day of fall that I can get out my pumpkin coffee mugs. I can do everything pumpkin. And I realize that Adam and Devin are probably rolling their eyes right now and very glad that they're on mute because they make fun of me for all of this. But I love it. I hope that you love it. And if you are one that also celebrates pumpkin spice latte season, then we're here to enjoy. And it is a great thing because we need things like that, I think, in some of the little fun things in life, because there's so much going on in the world and so many negative headlines and all of these things that we can be concerned about, that we're praying about, and that we have to talk about. And so when there are little things and little joys like pumpkin spice everything, it just makes the day happier. But let's turn to a not-so-happy headline. Iran is ordering a direct strike on Israel. This coming from Newsmax late yesterday. The Iran Supreme Leader the Ayatollah has ordered Iran to strike Israel directly in retaliation for the killing in Tehran of the Hamas leader, sources told the New York Times. That leader was assassinated in the Iranian capital of Tehran early on Wednesday morning, an attack that drew threats of revenge on Israel and fueled further concern that the conflict in Gaza was turning into a wider Middle East war. And this, of course, coming after the Hezbollah assassination as well of that leader. So let's bring in Oren McIntyre, who is a writer from The Blaze. So Oren, what does all of this ultimately mean for Israel and the ongoing conflict?
Well, obviously, this is dangerous territory. This is something that threatens to escalate and draw in other geopolitical allies into a wider conflict. At the same time, you try not to be too apocalyptic about this stuff, because it's not the first time that Israel and Iran has kind of had one of these show forces showdowns. Previously, Iran had sent a large number of drones to strike Israel, but didn't really do any significant damage. Most of them seemed to be programmed to fall short or to not actually meet their targets. And so this could be a similar situation where, because of Israel's aggressive action and what it feels is its own defense, Iran has to make a show of force to save face in front of people. But how serious will it be? How much damage will it actually extract? Those are the questions that really determine whether or not this becomes a wider issue.
And so what is Israel saying, if anything? I know Benjamin Netanyahu made a statement late yesterday as well, just in terms of responding to this reported order of a strike.
Well, I mean, as we know so far, Israel, I believe, has not claimed the actual killing of the Hamas official inside Iran. And so I would imagine that they are not interested, or, you know, they do not feel, at least as long as they do not take credit for such an attack, that they would warrant a response. I think Israel's response to these kinds of attacks is fairly uniform, which is, you know, we are not going to stand for this. We will continue the fight against, you know, terrorists inside of our own territory or inside of Gaza until that mission has been achieved. And they've been pretty explicit about the fact that I don't think they want any retaliatory strikes from Iran to have any impact on their continued mission to go after those that they feel are responsible for the terrorism that occurred on the October 7th.
I'm speaking with Orrin McIntyre, who's a writer at The Blaze. And you mentioned October 7th. I mean, we are just a couple of months away from the one-year anniversary of that horrific act of terrorism. And so has this conflict gone on and escalated wider than people really anticipated? And I mean, it seems like things are only spreading and getting larger rather than you know, some of these peace talks and ceasefires that some were originally suggesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a very dangerous game of chicken played by both sides. The Palestinians understand that ultimately, because they are stateless, they have no ability to actually wage a conventional war against the Israelis. And so they rely on kind of this terrorism and then, sympathy maneuver where certain people strike, they do terrorist activity. Israel goes in, attempts to stop, often overreacts, and therefore generates worldwide sympathy for the Palestinians. But of course, Palestinians are literally burning the lives of women and children in order to generate that sympathy. And so the bet really is ultimately that Israel will wear away its international goodwill in its overreaction to what has happened. Israel, for its part, obviously does not want to constantly endure terrorist attacks and therefore feels it necessary to go ahead and complete the job of rooting out any possible terrorism, though inside of Palestinian-controlled territory, I don't even know what that looks like, because ultimately, as long as Palestinians continue to live in the conditions that they have and have the multi-generational blood feud they have with Israel, it seems very unlikely that that will stop, even if you root out certain leaders. And so we end up in this very dangerous dynamic where both are trying to push the levels of conflict on purpose, each one hoping that this will bring an end to the other's ability to go ahead and do what they're doing.
And you make a really good point that, you know, Palestine can't really continue this effort for long unless they get some other countries to ally with them and participate with them in this effort against Israel. And so is there a possibility that, since Israel hasn't taken responsibility or credit for this particular Hamas leader being killed in the heart of the capital city of Iran, that may have been a move to get Iran to engage when it otherwise may not?
Do you mean like the Palestinians may have attempted to do this in order to draw Iran into a wider conflict?
Yeah, either, you know, that or some other, you know, country that's interested in that kind of provocation. I mean, it seems like, and a lot of reports that I'm reading are saying, you know, that this was a really bold move from Israel to go into the capital. And it doesn't necessarily make sense that that Israel would provoke Iran like that. So are there other possibilities of what occurred?
Yeah, there's always the outside chance that this is a false flag operation intended to go ahead and create the reaction that you're talking about. I would say that Israel does have a pretty long history of ostentatious displays of force when it comes to kind of letting other Muslim countries or the Palestinians know that they will not stand for certain things. So I think you have a likely scenario in which, Israel is the most obvious actor there. But like you said, the possibility does exist. It does seem like a foolish action on Israel's part. You know, you want to set the tone. Yes, you want to make it clear that you're not going to allow the assistance of terrorist activity inside your borders. But that is the type of move that is an act of war in any other scenario. And so unless Israel was very, very sure that it wanted a war with Iran, it certainly should not go ahead and claim credit for killing a leader inside their borders.
And in a statement that I pulled up, Hamas's military wing said that the criminal assassination of the leader in the heart of the Iranian capital is a significant and dangerous event that shifts the battle to new dimensions and will have major repercussions across the entire region. So where does this position then, you know, the United States in terms of watching this unfold? Obviously, Anthony Blinken is not really engaged, at least in terms of just sort of standing back and basically saying, well, you know, we'll see. And we have the lamest of lame ducks of presidents currently sitting in either the Oval Office or maybe his beach house. We don't really know. I saw somebody yesterday on social media asking for President Joe Biden to hold up a newspaper with today's date just so that we're sure that, you know, he still is out there actually making statements. But where does this position the United States? Because, you know, we still have some American citizens that have been involved in this, and yet the United States probably wisely hasn't yet engaged in this fully.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want American citizens to be put in harm's way, but we have made discretionary choices when it comes to engagement. For instance, when Ukraine killed an American journalist, when they murdered an American journalist in one of their jails, Gonzo Lira, we continue to send money to Ukraine. So it's not like the United States goes to war with every country that murders one of its citizens, sadly. So that wouldn't be a very consistent application of use of force there. Ultimately, like you said, we're in a very scary situation. We are in a situation where we don't know who the actual president of the United States is. It's pretty obvious that Joe Biden was cooed out of running for president. And if he was cooed out of running for president, then he's certainly not the one calling the shots inside the Oval Office, which I believe has been the case for quite a while, but is as obvious as it can be to anybody who's paying attention now, which means literally the United States has no clue who is in charge, no idea who is president, no person acting as a chief executive under Article 2. And so any calls that are made in this very dangerous moment will be made by unelected officials, probably a small council of them, somewhere inside the deep state, the White House, a crossover of power centers there. But the fact that that is even a question in a moment in which we could be pulled into a wider geopolitical conflict is terrifying. At a moment like this, you hope that everyone would counsel caution, would go ahead and encourage Israel and Iran and everyone involved as much as possible to go ahead and try to reduce the tensions, if that can even be done at this point. But the fact that we really wouldn't know who would even make a decision on what U.S. foreign policy would be is itself pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and this coming as Kamala Harris is going to announce her vice presidential pick as early as next Tuesday, so that she and her running mate will have that rally that's in Pennsylvania. And one of the forerunners that's being suggested is Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. And yet, being fairly Orthodox or practicing Jewish himself, there are some concerns among Democrats that that selection would alienate some of the pro-Palestine base that Kamala would need in some of the swing states. So how tenuous is this issue heading up to the election, really for both sides?
It is, but it's especially tenuous for the left. I mean, the right obviously has its own concerns here, but the left-wing civil war that you're pointing out there is a huge problem for them. They have a real difficulty with the establishment of the party, who tends to have a legacy obligation to the state of Israel, and kind of the woke vanguard that is often pushing a DEI candidate like Kamala Harris. And so, you know, I guess the idea with a selection like Shapiro would be that he balances out her somewhat more pro-Palestinian, pro-woke leanings. But I can't imagine ultimately that will make a significant change. And like you said, it could even depress the vote in certain sectors of the Democratic Party. The conflict in Israel in Gaza is a huge issue for the left. And don't let them fool you otherwise. They might try to make noises about how they're getting onto one page about this, but there's a real showdown. There have been multiple people who have left the left over this. There have been multiple billionaires who have said, we are no longer going to be involved because they are Jewish and because they feel this attack on Israel and Zionism in general And so I think that this is going to continue to be an issue whether they put Shapiro on the ticket or not.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how all of that plays out, and we'll have an answer in just the next couple of days. But Orrin McIntyre from the Blaze, really appreciate your commentary as always, and you can follow Orrin on X and also read everything that he writes, and I would encourage you to do that. He's one of my favorite authors to read at the Blaze. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So as we are less than 100 days out from the November election, with the presumptive Democrat nominee being Kamala Harris, of course, the left is turning to racism. They're turning to identity politics. They're turning to sexism. And of course, because the Republican ticket is two white men, one of them being older, one of them, you know, being a little younger. He's almost 40 and apparently apparently regrets that. I don't know why J.D. Vance said that at a rally, but I understand. Now, of course, the left, you can't go anywhere. You can't open social media. You can't listen to the news. You can't read anything without everything being about race and gender. And so Donald Trump actually appeared at the National Association of Black Journalists when Kamala Harris apparently was invited. She declined to go. He went. And this journalist actually asked him, do you believe Kamala is only on the ticket because she is a black woman? And of course, that question is just framed so poorly. And Trump, in classic style, gave a very Trumpian response and said, I didn't even know that she was black. I always thought she was Indian American until she decided to become black. And he's gotten a lot of criticism from the left on that. But he's actually right. I mean, there are headlines that when Kamala Harris became the attorney general in California, that, you know, she was lauded as this Indian American. And then all of a sudden, when she was running for president and, of course, got, you know, 0% of the vote, and Tulsi Gabbard just absolutely annihilated her on that debate stage, she was running as a black woman. And Joe Biden, in selecting her as the vice president, even said that she is a diversity, equity, and inclusion hire. And so the left is suggesting to the right that we're just slamming her and that we're somehow racist if we call out the fact that she is a DEI hire. But Joe Biden himself early on confirmed that she is a DEI hire. Listen to this, cut eight.
They're trying to erase black history. We're gonna write black history because it's American history. It's American history. Together we make history, not erase it. To me, the values of diversity, equality, inclusion are literally, and that's not kidding, the core strengths of America. That's why I'm proud to have the most diverse administration in history. It taps into the full talents of our country and starts at the top with the vice president.
Okay, I'm proud to have the most diverse administration that starts at the top with the vice president. I mean, he's specifically saying that she's a DEI hire. And yet, that somehow is now just the right that is slamming her for that. So, you know, they love to rewrite history. They love to push cultural Marxism on us. And if we don't understand, and this is my point, if we don't understand how to take what they are suggesting and not just say, no, we're not racist and be all defensive, but point out what they're actually doing, then conservatives are not doing our job at messaging the truth. And this isn't a Republican versus Democrat issue. This is a worldview issue. And this is what I will be talking about for the next 3 months of this campaign cycle, because I think that the overall point that Team Trump is really missing is honing in on the worldview issues that are actually at stake here and pointing out the differences, not just between Republicans and Democrats, but an understanding of humanity, of government, of legitimacy, of all of these values that are such extreme ideological differences. And so what's actually on the ballot, it's not democracies on the ballot, it's not, you know, Republican versus Democrat on the ballot. What's actually on the ballot is worldview. And more evidence of cultural Marxism could not be greater than when you look at how there are now all of these different groups that are based on immutable characteristics, including race, age, and gender. And the left, on one hand, says that those aren't immutable characteristics, right? Because, you know, you ain't black enough if you don't vote for Joe Biden. So it doesn't actually matter, you know, to them. They will profess that your ideology makes you either an oppressor versus oppressed. But then their own Marxism will hypocritically actually win out when you look at how these groups like White Dudes for Kamala and the White Women for Kamala are organizing, and they're being told specifically to, quote, use our privilege and to vote for Kamala, as if white people are and women, and also men, of course, because, you know, the gender issue, as if those groups categorically are obligated as members of the oppressor class to vote for her, when her policies aren't even trying to appeal to any of them or actually benefiting any of those categories in terms of economics, border security, traditional values, families, you know, nothing. And I've watched so many different clips and so many members of the media who are saying that, of course, the minorities and women have to vote for Kamala because she represents their image, right? And then they're also saying that white people categorically and men categorically, because they are the oppressors, need to vote for her to use their privilege to benefit the greater society. I mean, this is cultural Marxism. That is what fundamentally they are saying, because if you're a member of the oppressor class, you need to use your privilege for the greater good of society, which is for more equality and more equity. This whole DEI notion, this whole critical theory notion, the whole idea ultimately of communism, that's what they're saying. And if you're a member of the oppressed class, of course you don't want an oppressor, the older white man that is Donald Trump, to be back in office. I mean, this is blatantly cultural Marxism. And yet not a lot of people, and especially Team Trump, are actually pointing this out. And I really hope that the people that are advising Donald Trump right now on messaging and the campaign and all of that really could get to the heart of this before there may be a debate on stage between Trump and Kamala. Because if this is only about policy, conservatives win 100% of the time, because our policies actually are better than the left. Our policies that are conservative, of course, will benefit the most freedom and liberty for the most people. I mean, we have human flourishing because of conservative principles and values. And so the left is never going to have a debate on policy. They are going to try to obfuscate that and suggest to earn, and not just earn the vote, they suggest they're entitled to the vote based on this Marxist notion of oppressor versus oppressed. And in anyone that they are trying to speak to, regardless of who the person is, they will categorize you into either oppressor versus oppressed. And if you are oppressor, you need to use your privilege and vote for Kamala Harris. If you are oppressed, then of course you need to vote out your oppressor that would be Donald Trump. And this is what they're selling. We have to be better at messaging this and pointing out the actual evil that is this worldview and ideology. And this is so frustrating to me as someone, you know, who literally used to work for Donald Trump's campaign in 2020, to see how short they're falling on messaging and pointing out this worldview distinction. Because if we could actually tell these people who are being told that they are victims of the oppressors, that no, it's actually Kamala Harris's policies that are victimizing you, that is a much better message, and it actually is the truth. And rather than just attacking or offending or inflaming some of these bases, like, for example, the single childless cat lady. If you have been around social media or media at all in the last couple of weeks, this is the number one push against J.D. Vance, and this is the opposition line of attack for the childless cat lady remark. So this is, before we talk about it, let's go back to the 2021 Ohio Senate campaign when this comment originated on Tucker Carlson's former Fox News show. And this is what J.D. Vance actually said. This is cut one.
Saying is that we're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made. And so they want to make the rest of the country miserable, too. And it's just a basic fact. You look at Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, AOC, the entire future of the Democrats is controlled by people without children. And how does it make any sense that we've turned our country over to people who don't really have a direct stake in it?
So clearly he's not talking about every childless cat lady, every woman who prioritizes career over family. He's not talking about any of that. He's talking about the people who are actually in power in the Democrat Party. I mean, he refers to Pete Buttigieg, right? Who's not a childless cat lady. I mean, maybe he identifies as one. I mean, because, you know, the Democrats think they can do that now. But clearly he's speaking about those in power in the Democrat Party. And he's trying to clarify that, J.D. Vance. And I think he does that actually very well. He's gone on Megyn Kelly's show. He's gone on a number of other media shows trying to clarify those comments and doubling down on saying, we don't want people who don't have a stake in America's future to be running the country. But the problem with that is that it's insulting to a huge swath of, frankly, women voters that Republicans not only need, but they could actually appeal to in a much better way. And so when he's doubling down on this and saying that because, you know, Kamala Harris doesn't have biological children, then she doesn't have a stake in America's future and these people shouldn't be leading the country, then this is just leading to absurd comments and a lot of advantageous opposition media from the left. And we've put together this kind of montage of a lot of these leftist Democrat women who identify as the single childless cat lady and their responses. So listen to this. Cuts out.
I am childless. I have cats. I am the biggest nightmare of this J.D. Vance. I am a lady who loves her pets. They are good for taking care of all the rats. I am woman. This is cat. We are an item and together we are brats. Get out your notebook. We have a quote. In November, we are all going to vote.
You don't mess with cat, childless cat ladies. He just talks nonsense. With all the stuff that's going on in the world, and he's going to pick on childless cat ladies?
Yeah, again, I just think that's beneath the dignity of anybody who seeks to present themselves as a U.S. senator or any kind of leader in this country.
Childless cat lady, I am running the whole country. Childless cat lady.
Meow, meow.
Watch out, J.D.
Listen,
up, you wingnut elegy. This country is still controlled by men in systems that were set up by men that are carefully crafted to continue to benefit men. So to put it in women-hating terms, you'll understand you're being hysterical.
J.D. Vance's comments about, you know, the childless cat lady suggest that, you know, in this world in which, you know, he envisions, the role of a woman is to be a walking uterus and to give birth. And if they don't do that, then they have failed.
Childless cat lady, I am running the whole country. Childless cat lady, meow, meow. Watch out, JD.
Yeah, that was an actual TikToker. But there are so many different songs and montages just absolutely making fun of this cat lady comment and actually getting a huge base to think and to buy into this notion that J.D. Vance and thereby the whole Trump ticket and thereby, you know, the entire GOP and the MAGA base are these male chauvinist patriarchal oppressors, right? And so Team Trump is actually missing, I think, a huge opportunity to tell the, quote, childless cat lady or the single career woman, not just about, you know, who's in office or, you know, who has a stake in the country, but how Kamala's policies are negatively impacting her. The childless cat lady, the single career driven woman, that is a huge voting base for the Democrats, like Chelsea Handler, which is one of the commenters in that clip. They think that Kamala is her hero because she is the ladder climber, right? She is the one who's getting to the top. She's finally going to break the glass ceiling. This is why, for as terrible as Hillary Clinton actually is as a person, and how much she's so unlikable, she was a hero to the single career-driven woman. And so J.D. Vance is missing a huge opportunity to say Kamala is not your hero. It's Kamala's policies that make it unsafe for you, the career woman, to walk home at night after work when you're always looking behind you to safely, you know, leave a bar at 3 a.m., which a lot of them do when, you know, they're going out and, you know, looking to date, to be safe in their homes when they're living alone, when you have so many crime-ridden Democrat-run cities, when you're concerned about the border and illegal aliens that are coming in that are committing atrocities against women for the college campuses that you want to send your daughter to so that she can get an education and become a career woman, which a lot of these people want if they have kids, right? They want their daughters to be able to pursue that, and look at what happened in Georgia. And so why isn't the GOP saying Kamala Harris is not your hero? It's her policies that are not providing safety and security for you in your life choice to be a career woman. And it's the GOP that actually wants to rid cities of crimes and protect our borders and make sure that you are safe, make sure that you can pursue happiness and have your individual decision making for yourself in your career, if that's what you want, and to convince them that the GOP actually has their best interests in mind. Because if all he's doing is just attacking this single career-driven woman, then he's basically saying, I don't want your vote, when the policies of Kamala Harris are so disastrous for the single career-driven woman. At least tell them why Kamala Harris is not actually for them. She's totally against them. It's the Republican GOP that actually cares to protect her. And then once you get that understanding, you have that conversation, then you can talk about why, you know, it's better ultimately for your prosperity to have a family, to have traditional values, to go to church, to be engaged in local community, and then you can start having that conversation. But if all you're doing is insulting them, then you're just saying, yeah, go and vote for Kamala Harris. I don't even need you. So Team Trump really needs to get to the heart of the worldview issue. We'll talk about that right more coming up next.
Today's issues.
Blaming a gun for a violent crime or a murder is like blaming the pencil for a misspelled word.
Ooh, I like that.
That would be like a student who he does terrible on spelling, and he says,
we've had a rash of pencil-oriented mistakes.
Misspell words.
Today's issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
back, and we are talking about getting to the heart of the issue that is on the ballot in November, which is worldview. And I meant to say we'll be right back with more, not more back or something like that. But see, when you start talking about Kamala Harris, sometimes you start sounding like Kamala Harris and her word salad. So I think that Dr. Alex McFarland tuned in right as we were going to break. And so hopefully you were laughing with me, Alex. And he is the host of Exploring the Word right here on AFR at 3 p.m. Central and 4 p.m. Eastern. So good morning.
Good morning, Jenna. How are you doing?
You know, I am good, but I am fired up today because I really think that the GOP is missing a huge opportunity to combat this whole narrative from the left about, you know, the white dudes for Kamala, the women for Kamala, the, you know, black voices for Kamala, all of these different things, the single childless cat lady now for Kamala, because this is ultimately cultural Marxism at play when they are intentionally trying to categorize voters into oppressor versus oppressed and say, use your privilege to combat the white male chauvinist that is telling you, single childless cat lady, that we don't even want your vote. And I think what they need to say and what the GOP needs to say is that we are the only worldview policy party that actually has the best interests of all Americans at heart. We want to close the border. We want to secure cities. We want to ensure that criminals are actually punished. We want to stop having men compete in women's sports to protect women. I mean, all of these things that Kamala Harris is not doing in terms of policy, but yet she's getting so much money and so much adulation from all of these groups that think that they either have to use their privilege or they have to not vote for their oppressor.
Yeah, and this is critical theory being leveraged and shoehorned into the public consciousness to try to get this election, to try to get people to always think in terms of, I'm oppressed, I'm the victim. And for years, it's been called identity politics. But, you know, Jenna, I still believe if they are talked to, that the majority of Americans still have a moral conscience. If, like you say, if the GOP would talk about securing the border, the safety and the welfare of taxpaying American citizens, upholding the Constitution, the rule of law, the safety and the welfare of all people, and I was listening to you in the previous segment, safety and welfare of women. These are common sense issues. When I was at the convention 2 weeks ago, a number of the speakers, Donald Trump included, said we need to govern using common sense. And, you know, let me just say in philosophy, there's a word called sophistry, which generally means like trickery, flimflam, you know, using language in a disingenuous way. The Democrat worldview, because it is not reality, they use language to deceive people, mislead people. Sometimes we call that lying. So I really think the GOP has an opportunity, but look, with less than 100 days to go, they better get on it and message forcefully with conviction and clarity, because this love fest over Kamala is leading millions of people potentially down the primrose path to Marxism and the loss of everything we've held dear for 248 years.
Yes, so well said. And it's so true that people are being misled into buying into this notion of cultural Marxism, and I think that they're not even realizing what's going on here. Some who are trained Marxists, and some of these clips that have come out of Zoom calls, for example, like I was watching a clip yesterday of this white woman who started saying, just spouting all of this pitch-perfect rhetoric of cultural Marxism and how white women need to use our privilege and we need to not interrupt anyone else who's a minority when they're speaking, and you know, all of these different things that tagged white people categorically as the oppressors. And if the conservatives are only on the defensive and doubling down on comments that are being taken out of context, like, you know, the childless cat ladies, or what Donald Trump said, which, you know, he was right about Kamala Harris identifying first as an Indian American and now being a Black woman. But if they're only defensive and they're only responding, then we are playing on the same playing field of cultural Marxism, instead of shifting that ground and calling that out and saying, wait a minute, we are not going to buy into that. Let's talk about policy, because in this country, our founders presumed that all human beings are created in God's image, created yes. equal, not equality, and flipping the tables, because she can't respond to that.
Amen. Well said. It's a worldview issue, and really critical theory is racism. Because for one thing, critical theory presupposes and in fact teaches, this is one of the doctrines, that Caucasians are genetically born as racist. One of the reasons that, you know, I just wish people would wake up and realize this idea of a finite pie, that if one person has a meal, conversely, somewhere on the other side of the country, somebody else went hungry. And if you have, you, by definition, are an oppressor. That's just patently false. Like you said, our Constitution, based on natural law, presupposes that we're made by God. Therefore, we're all equal in terms of personhood, humanity. But if you want that food on the table, you've got to work. It's not just, you know, communism where the government feeds you. You have to work and become something. But here's the other thing: besides being racist, critical theory dehumanizes people, because the government is essentially saying, the Democrat Party is saying, you know, you can't make it without us. You're incompetent. You're incapable. You're weak. You need us. And in a way, Jenna, I mean, it's like really pimping humans and saying, you know, I'm the big brother. You must have me, or you can't make it out there. American individualism, rugged individualism, has said, no, you can. You might be born into poverty, as I was, but if you work hard, live right, say your prayers, find your skills, and apply yourself, with God's help and the opportunity this nation gives you, you can become whatever you dream of becoming. The Democrat worldview, whether it be the racism of critical theory, the hedonism of just live for pleasure, you know, and there's no consequences to our actions, relativism, it's a worldview of death, Jenna. It really is. And I would beg, I would plead with everybody listening to this, for one thing, pray for this nation. We need the intervention of God. And I'm just going to say this. Let me give a little bit of a big picture. Look, here is why Satan and those who don't know the true and living God, they want this nation to fall, because America, like no other nation in world history, has been used by God to proclaim truth, to bring liberty and freedom, stability, prosperity, the betterment of the human condition, plus, in many quarters, the gospel. America has been used to really put some points on the scoreboard for Christ's great commission, and Satan is trying to end all that. But I think we have a little window of opportunity to stand in the gap, to make a difference. And Jenna, I've pastored two churches, spoken in more than 2,000. I call on pastors to have your churches pray, to urge your people to vote, be informed, and vote godly. I mean, there's a lot I could say on this, but if you just use common sense and biblical sense, you'll figure out how to cast your vote, folks. And so...
It is. Yes, go ahead. It is about common sense, and common sense, because common sense reflects the truth of reality. And so our policies in government should reflect the truth of reality. And another thing that that this critical theory and Marxism and communism ultimately does, that denies the imago Dei in each individual, is through this whole notion of corporate guilt, that if you are born into a certain race or gender, which are immutable characteristics, even though the left hypocritically says they're not, but then they want to say, but if you were born a white man, for example, then you are automatically an oppressor. This is how, you know, white male babies are oppressors at birth, and yet somehow we can reimagine our own identity. I mean, it's all just hypocritical nonsense, but they're denying the individualism and also the individual responsibility that each of us have before the Lord, and the individual in terms of self-governance, self-responsibility, and also the blessings of liberty and the ability to pursue happiness as an individual and make decisions for ourselves and our family. So this goes all the way to not only our ability to self-govern and have human flourishing, but also our individual responsibility before the Lord to come into a right relationship with Him. And so all of these things, when you take out this common sense, it does lead to death, because it ultimately leads to denying our need for a Savior. And at fundamentally, which is the most important issue, and then outflowing from that, it denies a reality and the harm that is being caused to society at large, but also things, you know, that are just so on face absurd, like men and women's sports. I mean, we're seeing, you know, the two boxers that were disqualified previously as biological males that are now entering a women's full contact sport. I mean, we're not talking about them playing chess or being, you know, on the diving team. We're talking about them boxing. I mean, this has real world consequences for people in terms of harm, not only physically, but spiritually.
Indeed. Well said. So well said and so articulate. By the way, how much time do we have?
About 5 minutes.
Oh,
so,
okay. Isn't it interesting that pro-choice people depend on people who aren't pro-choice? Pro-LGBT people, you know, the gay trans people, are here because of at least one human couple that wasn't LGBTQ trans. And socialist programs, initiatives, depend on funding from people and groups that aren't socialist. And let me tell you what I'm getting at, folks. One of the beautiful things about American government and American culture has been its sustainability. I mean, we just celebrated July 4th, you know, 4 weeks ago, 248 years of American constitutional representative government. But here's the thing. If 2024 had been 1776, we wouldn't have America. We have had a sustainable America because of people who weren't socialists, who weren't moral relativists, who weren't hedonists. I mean, the founders believed, as the twice Pulitzer-nominated historian Rodney Stark said, America was built by, quote, the iron Protestant work ethic. Now, here's the thing. In philosophy, there's what's called the principle of teleology, or design. In other words, something has to be sustainable, comprehensive, consistent. Okay, the most pro-abortion person is indebted to at least one human that wasn't pro-abortion, i.e. their mother. Gay people are here because of people who weren't gay. No hetero person is contingent on a gay person, but all gay persons are contingent on those who weren't gay. And I was just on Fox News about 3 weeks ago debating a pastor that was very leftist, and he was talking about all these great, you know, kind of utopian things he runs. And I says, where do you get your support money? And he was talking about individuals. I said, notice the socialist Marxist initiatives are funded by people who make money and create wealth who aren't socialists and Marxists.
Great point.
I'm going to put it this way. Parasites and hosts. The conservative platform, folks, is a sustainable free market economy, moral-based representative government and culture that blesses people, a rising tide lifts all boats, it's sustainable. The Democrat platform is the platform of falsehood, unreality, death, and ultimately it fails the test of teleology. Now, I know I'm deep in the weeds here. Folks, use common sense. How is the country safer with the border open? It's not. How are we more prosperous when we're squandering and redistributing wealth and confiscating what you earn? It's worse. I got to give my website, alexmcfarland.com/vote. Please read it, folks.
Thank you so much, Alex McFarland, for your time. I always appreciate it. And if you are a single-issue voter, let your issue this election be worldview. Comprehensive biblical worldview based on truth will give you all the policy answers that you need. We should, as Christians, be single-issue voters to vote truth. And that's going to be our mantra moving forward in the last less than 100 days before this election. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.